Welcome back, everyone, to season 4 of This Week in Japan, the very first episode of 2022. Today is January 7th, and we're coming to you straight from Hiro, Tokyo. I'm your host, Julian Domanski, and joining me, as always, is my co-host and founder of Japan Insider, Yasuharu Matsuno.
Hey guys, welcome back, and Happy New Year. I hope you guys had a wonderful Christmas and Oshogatsu. So what were you doing towards the end of the year and Oshogatsu, Julian?
At the end of the year, actually, I was just working.
Were you?
Yeah, I took my break more around Christmas time.
But
I went snowboarding. It was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
I say I was working. I was like half working at home, you know, just
working
very lazily. You know?
Yeah, not as hard as usual, but
yeah,
you have to do some work almost.
That's it.
Yeah,
it's just kind of ticking over. But yeah, no, snowboarding was really cool. I went to Hakuba and it was almost like a blizzard when I was there. So at the top of the mountain. Could barely even see anything, but
really?
It was really fun. Yeah,
is that dangerous?
Oh, well, you're on the slope still. It's totally fine. Uh-huh. You know, got the goggles on.
Right.
I don't know, but lots of fresh snow, so the powder's good.
Yeah, Hakuba is one of the most popular skiing resorts in Japan, right?
I think it's the second. Yeah, so Niseko in Hokkaido is the biggest, most popular.
Yeah,
famous one.
I guess no doubt.
Because it's the most north, right? So most snow. But I think that mountain range is like the Japanese Alps, so it tends to get a lot of snow. Even though it's kind of in the middle of the country.
Right.
So, it's a really great spot. But how about you? So did you go back home to Hiroshima?
Yeah, I went back to Hiroshima with my family, and we spent the end of the year and Oshogatsu on the Miyajima Island.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that was our first time experience, but it was very, very good. So Miyajima is quite well known for its Tsukushima Shrine, right?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I've heard of it. I've never been there, but
I've never been there yet.
No, unfortunately, yeah.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, it's probably one of the most famous shrines and popular one in Japan. And it's because the shrine itself and the torii gate as well are floating on the water. But unfortunately, torii, since I guess a bit before the outbreak of COVID, has been renovating.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was supposed to be done before the beginning of the Olympics 2 years ago. Right. I mean, based on the original plan.
That was what I heard the plan was. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it was supposed to be finished by then.
Mm.
But even as of January 2022, it's still ongoing.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. It makes me wonder, though, because I can understand like postponing the Olympics because it's such a huge event, right? But a torii gate is like three pieces of wood, essentially. I mean, I'm sure it's more complicated than this, but.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, to be fair, I'm no engineer, but it can be quite technical, I believe, because the whole structure is gigantic.
True, yeah.
But then, yeah, my take is that you're being a bit lazy, kind of using the COVID as an excuse,
right?
Yeah. Or kind of procrastinating the, construction work.
Yeah, yeah. I do wonder what they're doing, though, because, I mean, I don't know how old that torii gate is, but obviously it was built in a time before heavy machinery and industrial boats, right? So if people that in those times managed to build that thing, I'd imagine like nowadays we should be able to renovate it fairly easily. I don't know.
Well, yeah, if you be serious.
Yeah, right? So yeah, maybe you're right. Yeah, maybe they're just using it as an excuse.
Yeah, so it's a shame, but still, I think easily over tens of thousands of people were visiting the island. So it was, packed with people, local people.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So I was kind of imagining once the, COVID is over and people outside Japan start coming back to the country. And, Miyajima is one of the most popular sightseeing spots amongst foreigners too. So once they start coming back, it'll be full of people.
Yeah, I mean, I think the site of the torii gate on the water is probably one of the most like famous
iconic spots in Japan.
Exactly, yeah. Right. Even like around the world, people kind of recognize it.
Yeah.
They might not know the name, but they'll be like, that's Japan. They know it, yeah. So.
Yeah, so me as a local, I mean, I'm not from the island, but Hiroshima is my hometown prefecture.
Mm.
So I was actually happy to see that many people coming back to the sightseeing spot. Because I was talking to a lady at the restaurant on the Miyajima Island, and she was saying that, yeah, their businesses were almost zero, mainly last year and the year before.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, for them, you know, they were desperate to get back to their customers.
I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah, and finally locals are coming back.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of spots like that in Japan. I mean, it's like that around the world, but in Japan, I find there's a lot of spots where people only go for tourism. Mm. You know, there's a lot of like isolated. They don't even have to be islands, but just in the mountains or like just random, like in the middle of the countryside kind of places. And without tourists, they lose like 90% of their business.
It's kind of
drastic. But that's good. It's kind of turning around and
But then I don't want to be talking about the negative story.
Sure.
But just yesterday, it was announced that Hiroshima will be closing all the restaurants before 8 p.m.
Oh, they're going under state of emergency.
So not technically, it's called Manen Boshiho.
Okay.
You've heard of Manen
Boshiho. Yeah, but that's like a restraint, right?
Yeah, restraint. Yeah. So it should be loose compared to the declaration of emergency.
Oh, it's what we had in Tokyo, right, after the emergency.
Yeah.
But it graded down, but it wasn't completely gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it was less strict, I guess you could say.
So Okinawa, they're seeing close to 1,000 new cases in a day.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And Hiroshima, it's not as bad, but they're also seeing hundreds of new cases a day.
Mm.
And Yamaguchi Prefecture right next to Hiroshima. So just yesterday, those three prefectures announced that they'll be imposing the restriction.
Mm. If I can say something really selfish, at least it's not Tokyo for a change. It's always Tokyo and we're stuck here. But it might be very soon. Yeah,
I mean, just a matter of time. Like, sure. You know, Tokyo is the most populous prefecture, you know, across the nation. So,
yeah, it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, a matter of time.
Just going to enjoy it while I can.
It's inevitable. Yeah. Drink as much as you can while you can. But yeah, besides, it was snowing heavily in Tokyo yesterday.
Yeah, it was really kind of like a fluke cold kind of front came through. It's been cold here, but not like enough to snow. But then I saw like rumblings on Twitter yesterday and I was like, the snow is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe, I don't know over here, but where I live, it was around 11, maybe 12 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I just started seeing the first few flakes falling.
Oh yeah, so did I.
Yeah. And then, by around 3 o'clock, it was coming down pretty heavy.
Yeah.
And then, I went out for a little stroll around my neighborhood at like 6, you know, once it all settled and stuff. It looked pretty nice.
Yeah, it did look nice. Yeah, I like snowing in Tokyo.
Yeah, it's cool, right?
If it's not excessive.
yeah, it wasn't. It was a nice layer, and then it just stopped. So now this morning, it's pretty kind of snowy everywhere, but it's not like causing problems.
Not major ones, I would say. Yeah, it wasn't. The traffic wasn't too bad yesterday, right?
No. I mean, you know, just cars have to drive a bit slower. My train moved a bit slower this morning, but there were no delays. Like.
Wasn't the worst.
Yeah,
I've seen the worst cases before.
Mm-hmm.
And Japanese transportations in general are known for their, you know, punctuality.
Yeah, sure.
But the thing is that Tokyo is not used to having snow.
Mm.
I think it only snows on average like once every couple of years or a few years.
Yeah, it might do. I mean, it did snow once last year. I don't even, do you remember 2019? It snowed in April. That one day, and it was it was like Sakura, the week.
And
then there was like so many people like so taking weird photos online, and there was just like, you know, like Sakura flowers covered in snow. It was so cool. It was so random. Weird things have happened. This is quite normal, right? It's just snow in January, but snowing in April was kind of crazy.
I still remember that.
Yeah.
But in general, people in Tokyo just freak out when, you know, both in good and bad ways, when it snows.
Yeah.
So I think this time it was quite peaceful.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was much of a problem at all. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear about any major accidents or massive delays or anything like that.
Happy snowing for everyone.
That's it.
So I believe both you and I have found some interesting stories over the last few weeks.
Yeah, so these aren't just from the most recent week because we've been off for almost 3 weeks now. So I've just been kind of collecting some, for me, mostly comical stories that I've been finding over the Christmas break.
I like
this. But yeah, I'll share my first one with you now. This is about the Tokyo Metropolitan Police Department getting into hot water over the winter break for losing two floppy disks containing the personal information of 38 people.
Oh, floppy disks.
Floppy disks.
I haven't seen those for, I don't know, how long?
Maybe
for the last 20 years?
Yeah, I haven't used one for probably about 20 years. We might even need to explain to, if we've got any younger listeners out there, a floppy disk is it's about the size of a coaster. It's a thin piece of plastic that you use to store data on. And it holds enough data to store about one MP3. It's basically like nothing.
So just a few megabytes.
They were about like four. I think you can get like 4, 8, 16 megabytes.
Oh,
they were just
wow. Tiny.
Yeah.
Tiny.
But yeah, floppy disks are a very archaic storage medium. But they always stick around because if you've noticed, all save buttons on applications, it's always a picture of a floppy disk.
Oh, right? Oh true. Right? When I think about it.
So they will live on forever. Because I think they were like the first like portable storage medium.
Probably.
After maybe like magnetic tapes. They're like from the 60s. But they were like huge, like reels. So
right,
maybe,
right.
I don't know. Maybe like for home computers, they were the first.
Mm.
But as we all know, right? Japan, land of 400-foot Gundam and all the futuristic neon lights and obviously fax machines. Uh-huh. So it's our a bit favorite. Of a polarizing place, right, Japan? It's very futuristic in a lot of ways, but still using fax machines.
Mm.
But apparently, a lot of government departments are still using floppy disks.
Oh, shit. I can't believe it. But the only thing I liked about floppy disks is that when you insert those disks into the, you know, computer machine, you feel kind of cool, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's got, I don't know, like, you feel like the Matrix or something. It's got kind of a hacker vibe to it.
Yeah. I think when I was a child, I used to carry them around. I mean,
yeah.
I think for certain classes in high school, for example, I think I used to carry those floppy disks.
Yeah, you used to get like stuff on them. But did you remember like the old days of like PC games? And you get like a stack of like 10 or 12 disks you'd have to install. So you'd sit there, like put first one in, and then it would install like the first 10th of the game, and then you put the next disc.
Oh, really? That's how you did it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I was more into like Super Famicom or Super Nintendo.
Right. Yeah,
those, how do you say, like console games?
Yeah.
And not really into PC games, but yeah, I can totally understand that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that gives you an idea of how outdated this medium is. So apparently the information of these 38 people, they were applying for public housing in Tokyo's Meguro Ward. And the disks were actually being sent to another office to see if the applicants were affiliated with any crime groups, which is sounds kind of goofy, but it's quite normal in Japan, right? To make sure you have no Yakuza connections.
Right.
But apparently on route, these disks like disappeared. And, you know, because it's like the police handling it, they have to obviously acknowledge the fact that they lost personal information.
Right.
I think even if someone finds these disks, they're not going to have any way of reading the data. I don't think you need to worry.
It won't be easy.
You don't need to worry. But like, as I was like reading this story, and I just, you know, when you like, you go down the rabbit hole on the internet, I just started reading about floppy disks. So it was giving me like nostalgic vibes.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was actually a story I missed from last year. This was from October 25th, 2021. But it was basically an announcement that the government is going to start phasing out floppy disks.
As they should be.
Yeah, yeah. And but they actually had like interview with a guy from Meguro Ward office. So again, I don't know if it's just Meguro, but they seem to be like the main cheerleaders for floppy disk technology.
Really?
So this one guy, Yoichi Ono, he said the disks almost never broke or lose data. So they're like the perfect kind of storage medium. But they were on track to basically back up all floppy disk data to other mediums by 2026.
Wow.
Yeah, that's like...
So we're going to take another several years.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? And I don't know what these would have been used for, but Mizuho Bank, they put out a statement saying that it would start charging 50,000 yen, so around $450, a month for the use of physical storage media, such as floppy disks. But I don't know if it... I've not lived in Japan long enough to know that you can use disks at the bank, but do you know anything like that?
I have no idea.
Yeah, it must be like a really old system.
Whoa.
I can imagine that there's like more like senior citizen clientele who maybe they've been using the bank for like 50, 60 years and they still have their like account floppy disk.
You know, the only thing that I agree with the guy, the Meguro Ward, is that floppy disks are much bigger than... I mean, even though they're slim, right? Each of them, their size is bigger than the typical USB memories, right? So it can be less difficult to lose compared to USB memories.
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah.
Because even though USB memories, based on my experience, they have fairly large storage space, you know. But at the same time, they're too small that you can easily lose them.
Right? Yeah, I've never owned a USB stick for more than a year before I lose it. It's just impossible.
I know what you mean. So yeah, right now you use Dropbox or...
I use like Google Drive for everything now.
Yeah,
cloud, or like I actually use my phone as a USB stick.
Oh.
Because it has like 250 gig of drive, right?
And sure.
You can just plug it with a USB cable and it actually works the same. So that's great.
Right.
It's a bit of a goofy story, but I guess only time will tell, and we'll have to check back in 2026 to see if the government has finally updated all their floppy disk data.
Sounds good.
So what have you got for us this week, Yasu?
So right after the new year, on January the 2nd, I saw the news about the oldest living person in Japan just hitting the age of 119.
Wow.
Can you imagine? So her name is Kane Tanaka, and she was born in January 1903.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we talked about her a couple of years ago in 2020.
Yeah, I don't remember the actual episode, but I do remember the conversation because I remember her interesting name, Kane.
Kane-san.
Which is a kind of unusual name, I think. It just sounds, I don't know, I've never heard it before, but maybe.
The way her kanji is written is quite irregular based on the modern Japanese language.
I remember you telling me that. Yeah.
But
I think at the time she just turned, it was 117.
Right.
And she was the second oldest person in the world, but the person first had just passed away.
Right.
So she had kind of been promoted, you know, by de facto to that rank. But now she's turning 119.
19.
So she's, you know, solidly, you know, firmly the oldest person.
Right. I think if you go to a website today, create an account and try to set your birthday to January 1903, I bet many of them won't even allow you to do that. I mean, there should be no options for that because it's almost impossible. But for those who are keen on Japanese history, 1903 is the year before the outbreak of the war between Japan and Russia.
Wow.
Of course, that's way before World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's just incredible to think that someone could have basically, you know, witnessed all of those world events. Mm-hmm. I think anything over a century is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But she would have lived through like Taisho, Showa, Heisei, Reiwa eras. Right, am I missing
good,
one?
Good guess, but she was born in Meiji, even before
Meiji.
Taisho.
It was really that early.
Yeah,
so I don't know when it ended. So I wasn't sure, but she lived through the five eras of Japan,
exactly,
in the most recent eras.
And Meiji basically is right after Edo period, the age of samurais.
When did Meiji end? Then what was the last year of Meiji?
So the Meiji era ends in 1912.
Oh, okay.
So 1903 is, you know, towards the end of Meiji era.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it's just incredible.
When you think about it, she was already 42 years old when the World War II ended.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine? I mean, we're much younger than that.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, everything you say about this woman is just hard to believe. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just human life expectancy is, for most people, let's say between 75, 80 years old, right? So once you go like 40, 50 years beyond that, it's just like...
Unimaginable.
It's just incomprehensible, isn't it? It's just crazy.
So yeah, that's a good point because Japan is known as one of the most long-lived countries in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I just checked yesterday and the average life expectancy in Japan reached record high for both women and men in 2020. For women, it's 87.74 years old.
Wow.
And for men, it's 81.64 years.
Wow, okay.
So, yeah, I won't be surprised to hear about the story of a 100 years old lady.
Yeah.
But 119 is a different level.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, yeah. But even the average, I mean, it's like, it's not just that you would expect to reach that age and pass away, right? It's like, you will live at least that long. And then some more after that, right? So probably most people make it to 90, you know, or a good majority, should I say. That's wild. I'd really love to meet her and ask her, like, what her... Because, you know, like, a lot of old people maybe, you know, compared to us, maybe people over the age of like 60, they might have quite different points of view compared to our generation regarding like social issues.
Yeah.
But I'd love to hear, because she's just seen like a complete change in society from basically like pre like war. Japan was very like, I don't know, I don't want to say like unscientific, but you didn't have like a lot of like heavy industry and stuff like that. I guess that was maybe the end of Meiji's when it was starting. But like, and to now when it's like, you know, floppy disk central. I would just love to hear her opinion on like how she thinks like society has changed for better or worse, or because she would have been able to say like in 1910 or something, I wonder what the future will be like. She literally lives so far in the future.
Yeah.
It's mental.
You know, if it wasn't for COVID, you know, we really want to interview her for our YouTube channel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And ask those questions, right?
It'd be fascinating.
Yeah. So just 80 years ago, you know, during the 1940s, we used to have a word, Kichikube.
Have you heard of this? I know. No. Be is like America and England, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know that.
Yeah.
Kichiku, ki means Kimetsu's ki.
Oh, like kill or like, oh no, demon.
Demon,
yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah. And Metsu is destroy, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but this one's Kichiku.
Oh, okay.
Well, basically, it's hard to directly translate, but Kichiku means like a demon.
Right, okay.
So Americans and British are demons.
Basically, white demons.
But that's how Japanese people used to think.
Right,
maybe
yeah.
Not everyone, but at least that's what the Japanese government was claiming.
Sure, I mean, yeah, I understand
that.
And
many people believed that
at the time,
you know, during
of
the
course.
Time of war.
Yeah, that's crazy, yeah.
What a transformation, right?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'd love to, you know, because I wouldn't even blame her, but, you know, when she was like a younger person to have had that thought, right? Because Japan was very isolated. You know, you're going to war with these people. So why wouldn't you think that, you know, all Americans and British
you would never able? Have a British friend like such as yourself.
Exactly, right? But, you know, maybe by this point in her life, you know, she's probably met a lot of foreigners. I mean, at least I hope she has.
I won't be surprised.
And yeah, I just love to hear what she has to say. Fascinating.
So have you seen her most recent pictures?
No, actually.
Okay, let's see. Yeah, so these were the pictures that were posted on Twitter by her great-grandson.
Wow, cool.
But you see, like, she's making, like, peace signs
for
the camera.
She looks pretty genki, man.
She's waving and smiling.
Yeah, yeah. It's so hard to imagine, but at that age, it must be so difficult just to be, like, cognizant and, you know, keep up with the world moving so fast around you, right? Because everyone knows, you know, as you get old, you lose your like mental, you know, ability and speed and stuff like that. But I imagine this is what I'll look like when I'm like 75.
Well, yeah, I don't blame you.
most British people we deteriorate pretty quickly. So I don't know. It's crazy to think that she's that old and still looks so full of life.
Yeah, I felt the same.
It's like you mentioned earlier, Yasser, right? Japan is one of, if not the most like long-lived country in the world for general lifespan, but. What do you think is one of the main reasons for that, or a couple of the main reasons?
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, there are many different theories about it. But me personally, I'd say the biggest one is eating habits. And I've spent many years outside of Japan, both in the East and the West. But based on my experience, food in Japan is more healthy than the food in the West. I mean, with all due respect. Because, for example, I used to live in New York, and I know that if you spend enough money and time doing research, you can find, you know, places to eat healthy food.
Sure.
But then, relatively speaking, it's much easier to find healthy options in Tokyo. I mean, not sure if it's a good example, but if you compare a burger and onigiri,
sure.
You know, those are both like, you know, two standards in two different countries, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, onigiri, I wouldn't say it's the most healthy food, but if you compare a burger and rice, rice is healthier.
Yeah. I think like the bulk of our like carbohydrates, you know, for most Asian countries is rice, right? And in the Western countries, it's potatoes and wheat and base things, right?
Right.
So a lot of bread.
Yeah, that's the thing. So if you order a burger, for example, in New York City, like they almost always come with fries.
Of course, yeah. But I mean, like anything, like you have like a roast dinner, it's got roast potatoes, mashed potatoes, yes, fried potatoes. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, all those kind of things are popular in Japan now, but they're all Western, right? Like mm-hmm. potato dishes. You know, but the way that you just phrase that, it kind of sounds almost like, you know, like everywhere in Japan has healthy food, right? But fast food's really popular in Japan, right?
It's getting, yeah, becoming more and more popular.
Like McDonald's is everywhere. There's like 500 McDonald's in Japan, mm-hmm. right? But the difference is the lack of excess. Mm. So Japanese people know how to eat a small portion.
Yeah.
Whereas in the West, and you know, especially in America, some of the portions are just ridiculously big, like unnecessarily big, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's an interesting point because I just saw the news story towards the end of the year that McDonald's would be only offering small sizes for fries because I think it's related to the COVID situation as well. Like they're having a hard time importing fried potatoes from the US.
I heard it was from Canada.
Maybe.
But either way, yeah, they were coming from abroad, right? The potatoes were coming and they had to ration out basically what they had left.
Yeah.
Apparently it was only for 1 week because they were expecting some more to come, but they were delayed.
Really?
They said like, yeah, for that 1 week, you could only order. But it's kind of funny because the day I read that, I actually went to McDonald's.
You did?
And I got a large. So I was like, yes.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I scammed the system.
Or maybe you thought, this is not Japanese gaijin, so we must offer the largest size we can.
Yeah, I don't want to piss him off. Yeah. I just like flip the table.
Yeah, I know. And you're going to sue us.
Yeah, because maybe like they have to explain when someone orders large, but maybe they just saw me and thought like, he's not going to understand what I'm going to say. Like,
they gave up.
Yeah, they just like, I'm fine. I got my large fries.
maybe they thought you're an American.
Could be, yeah, yeah. I'd be a bit offended, but
you shouldn't be. Because at the end of the day, you got the large fries.
That's it, yeah.
You must be happy. But having said, right, I just remember that in the news article, it said that Kane-san drinks Coke every day.
Wow, okay.
Coca-Cola.
Wow, that's like pure sugar.
Pure sugar.
It's mental.
Yeah, and her favorite snack is chocolate. So I guess she's not really having a typical Japanese, you know, person's like eating habits, but...
Oh, that's good news for me. Yeah, because my wife always says I eat too much chocolate. But then I'll be like, hey, look, the oldest person in the world eats chocolate every day.
yeah. You have a point, but at her level, like, can't apply general theories on someone like her.
Yeah.
She's definitely an outlier, even as a Japanese person.
That's it, yeah. Her body is just, you know, it's got to be, you know, made of something slightly different, right?
Yeah, or DNA, genes.
Yeah. But, you know, maybe that age, a little bit of extra. I imagine she doesn't eat like handfuls of chocolate, maybe like a few pieces or whatever.
Maybe.
But maybe just like extra sugar, the extra energy actually helps, you know, it just gives her, you know, a little bit extra genki in the morning, you know.
I just remembered even a famous American investor, Warren Buffett. I heard he also drinks Coke quite regularly.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's pretty old, isn't he? Yeah. But did he die recently? He's still alive.
Oh, he is.
He is. Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah.
Yeah. But maybe there's something with Coke. So if you want to follow Kane-san on Twitter, search for Tanaka Kane. TANAKAKANE 0102. So that's a Twitter account run by her great grandson. And he is saying that her family members are wishing that she will reach to the age of 120 years old.
I'd imagine next year. So, yeah. That's a gambare for Tanaka-san.
Exactly. So, what other stories did you find?
So my next story is about a Japanese professor and his team of students at Meiji University who have developed a prototype lickable TV screen.
I saw this one too. Yeah.
So before I even read the story, there's a picture of this girl just licking a screen. And it just looks absolutely mental.
Yes.
It's so funny. It
looks outrageous.
But apparently this thing is called Taste the TV. Uh-huh. And I love it. Its acronym is TTTV. So that's actually what it's called.
True.
So like, yeah, as television, right? Taste the television. And it uses a carousel of 10 flavored canisters. So I guess like kind of sprays to spray a combination of flavors onto a kind of a plastic sheet on the screen. So I could imagine probably one of your first thoughts is that doesn't sound very hygienic, right?
No.
So basically you have the screen. But there's like a disposable plastic sheet that goes over the thing. So every time a new person uses it, there's a fresh sheet. That's how they can kind of get around the the obvious spreading of germs, right?
Okay.
And yeah, it's just, it's kind of a weird, kind of wacky invention.
It's extremely wacky.
It's extremely wacky, yeah. So obviously, you know, behind any invention, there's always like the ethos, the mission objective. Why the hell would you invent a machine like this, right?
Well, for that, I can understand.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I was trying the latest VR headset at my friend's house a few weeks ago. And I believe the headset is called Oculus Quest 2.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Have you tried that one?
I haven't tried it, no, but I know what it is.
It's quite good because I remember 5-6 years ago, they had Oculus Rift, which was quite innovative back then.
Sure. But
I was quite impressed that the latest model is completely wireless.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was, you know, playing around with the headset, you know, playing boxing, ping pong. I even went into a virtual ramen shop that my friend created.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, I could hold a ramen bowl, you know, put it on the table, even throw it to the people. Or, you know, whatever I want to do.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I would say the resolution is still not high enough to feel real enough.
Sure.
It's like, you know, you're in the world of Minecraft.
Yeah.
But I would say it's immersive enough.
Mm-mm-mm.
So I was just talking to my friend that now we have sight, hearing, and touch.
Mm-mm.
But, you know, we were saying that probably the most difficult one to emulate is taste.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then just, you know, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, this news came out.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and it was, I thought it's quite interesting. So I guess with this kind of device, we are one step closer to the complete virtual reality.
I guess the only one missing is smell.
I mean, relative to taste, this smell is easier. I'm no expert, so.
Yeah, it might be, because I mean, fragrances have existed for a long time, right?
Uh-huh.
But even with taste, you know, like when you buy like potato chips that are like barbecue flavor. There's no meat in them at all.
Yeah.
It's all just like spices and like a very precise mixture of like certain chemicals or whatever that make it taste a bit like that kind of thing.
Exactly. So, yeah. That's where I'm, you know, kind of coming from. So considering that we already have 3D printers, smell printers, why not, right?
Yeah, exactly. It makes sense. So like I said, this device, it uses 10 different flavors, canisters, right?
Right.
So it will cut like an aerosol, like a deodorant or something, I guess it will spray. And it might say like, you know, like two sprays of like sweet and one spray of umami or something like that might create a particular flavor.
Right.
So I'd imagine in the future, they can like hone canisters to like more accurate flavors and then add more canisters. Because maybe with 10 canisters, you could create like 1,000 different flavors with all the combinations, but maybe 20 flavors. Could be like 1 million. Well, I didn't do the math, but it's going to be a much higher, right, if they add more different flavors. But the lead professor behind this project, Mr. Miyashita Homei, he said that the goal is to make it possible for people to have the experience of something like eating at a restaurant on the other side of the world, even while staying at home. So, you know, kind of following on from what you just said, right? It's just like extending that virtual reality experience. And I guess, you know, for most people, if you're within range of the restaurant, I don't know, maybe you can go onto like Uber Eats and be like, oh, I'm going to order this restaurant, but I wonder what it tastes like. you can log in with your Oculus Quest.
It makes sense, right? You know. But I can 100% appreciate the technology and the concept, you know, and the goal aim behind it. But yeah, licking the screen, it just doesn't look right.
Yeah.
That's the only issue I'm having now.
Well, actually, you know, after seeing it and laughing at it a lot, because it's very, very funny.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, like, you could spray it on anything, right? It's just, all the screen does, it just displays a picture of the food.
True.
And then the flavor actually goes onto the plastic sheet, right?
Uh-huh.
So technically, you could just, maybe like in VR, if you had like a plastic ball, and it could spray like apple flavor.
Right.
And if you lick the ball, it would probably feel like you were licking an apple.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
I guess, yeah, that's a better way.
I mean, I don't want to like lick balls either.
No, but you have to choose, you know, ball or screen.
Yeah. but something like that, I guess, is the way to do it. But I guess maybe just the hygiene factor is maybe the biggest hurdle. for this technology.
But I'm sure, you know, we will overcome the issue in the long run.
Yeah, I would imagine, yeah. But one of the things I thought was most impressive about this, compared to most new technologies, is that he said to build this entire system only costs Juman-in, which is around $875.
Oh, that's much cheaper than I expected.
Which is pretty impressive, right? Usually these kind of stuff, like new emerging technology, is really expensive.
Yes.
I'm sure it looks a bit like DIY kind of budget, you know, because the picture they show you is just like the screen, like, unit. But I imagine inside it probably doesn't look very sexy.
Mm.
So like just like cans stuck together and
well,
stuff.
Well, as much as this picture looks so goofy, it delivers the concept visually quite well, right?
Yeah, true.
At least you intuitively, right away, get what they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess we'll see maybe some future developments. Maybe they can add some smell as well and maybe hook up an Oculus Quest and give you the complete package. All right, so we've got a lot of goofy news this week, Yasu. What's your final story?
Yes, so I have another story that caught my eye related to convenience.
Okay.
Yes, guys. We always like to talk about convenience in Japan. So I think you know Lawson, of course.
Of course.
One of the biggest convenience chains in Japan. But this year, they'll be opening a new line of brand called Green Lawson.
Oh, okay.
And they say they'll come up with an official brand name eventually. Mm. But for now, it's called Green Lawson. And can you imagine how this Green Lawson is going to be different than the existing blue Lawsons?
Well, they already have Natural Lawson, right?
Yeah, good point. So,
which is like kind of organic foods.
Yeah, focusing on healthy food items. Right.
So, I mean, that's the image I get from the word green as well. So how will it be different from Natural Lawson? All right.
Okay, I got the answer I wanted.
Yeah, okay. So, complete confusion.
So Green Lawson is going to be super eco-friendly, focusing on SDGs, sustainable development goals. So for example, all the electricity used by the store will be powered by renewable energy. I heard mainly solar. And the refrigerators used in the store will be the most energy efficient ones.
Oh, okay.
And besides, they'll try to reduce the use of plastic. For example, when they sell shampoo, instead of selling a standard shampoo in a plastic bottle, a customer brings a container and sell the shampoo liquid by weight.
Oh, that's really good, yeah.
Yeah, and the same goes for dishwashing soap or detergent.
Oh, that's fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, I found this quite creative.
Yeah, I mean, actually, these kinds of shops already exist in the West. I know they're quite popular in America. I forgot what they call them. But, you know, it's like they'll have like a barrel of like milk and like, you know, like mineral water and like wine and stuff like that. And you take your empty bottles and containers, even for like cereal, it's just like a huge like box. You open it up with like a scoop. And you put it into like your Tupperware or something like that.
Oh, okay.
And they sell it by weight.
Right.
But yeah, the waste of plastic in Japan is just obscene compared to, you know, an average.
I can disagree.
Yeah, any average country. So that's a really cool initiative to see.
Yeah. And not only plastics, but they'll also try to achieve zero food losses in the future.
Oh, cool.
For example, they take orders from customers via a smartphone app. And make bentos on demand instead of making them beforehand and, you know, displaying them in the store. I'm most interested in this part because food waste in convenience has been a huge societal issue in Japan for many years. And I guess you'd agree, but Japanese convenience are best partly because they offer ready-to-eat bentos, onigiris, and snacks, you know, including your favorite fried chickens, right? So whenever you go, literally 24/7, all those like hot food, you know, ready to eat food are ready. But that convenience comes at the price, which is the fact that all those food that are unsold turns into food waste. And I sometimes feel bad about them.
That's actually brought up a couple of thoughts in my mind. But actually, that's like you say, that's been a kind of societal issue in Japan, but actually everywhere. And I think recently. I think it was France. They actually made it illegal. The government passed a bill for any supermarket chain. It's illegal for them to actually throw away food now. They have to give it to like homeless shelter or some kind of like reprocessing facility. And I think that could be one way, you know, that Japanese companies could maybe, you know, repurpose the food instead of throwing it away. But maybe more selfishly, I'm thinking, does that mean there'll be no more like half price bentos at the end of the day?
Right. I'm sure there'll be less.
Yeah, because that's one of my favorite parts of going to the shop. Like, because I tend to get home quite late a lot of times. So if I go to like the supermarket at like 10 p.m.,
right,
the half price sushi, which would, you know, usually be like 1,000 yen sushi, which is like good fish, but that's a bit much just for like lunch or something. But I think, well, if it's half price, then definitely going to buy that.
Right. But when you think about it, even though you may have to pre-order bentos, you know, before you go, which is kind of a hassle compared to how it is now.
Yeah.
But then it's always the case that the food that's prepared, you know, that's made right before you eat tastes the best.
Yeah. Right. I mean, as you were saying that, I was thinking, like, oh, it'll be more fresh. And that also made me think of a couple of other things. Like, one thing is, like, sometimes when I go to the shop and I stand in front of the bento section, there's too many choices, so I don't know what to pick, right? But if I have the luxury of, like, looking at my phone, maybe I can see, like, all the ingredients or whatever, like a nice picture. Maybe, like, it's easier to choose on the phone.
Sure about you. Maybe you'll be confused by so many options on the smartphone.
Maybe, app. Yeah. Hopefully they don't make it too confusing. But then also I was thinking, like, will these places need more staff? Because, like, usually at Lawson's, all the food comes from a different factory, right? Or like a processing facility, right? But, you know, there'll be like two people on the register and like another person just in the back making bento all day. I'm wondering how that will work.
As far as I saw, there'll be less people because they're also trying to automate the cashier, payment part.
So will it be like the automatic store that we visited last year?
That was Family Mart, but yeah. Maybe something similar. But then, yeah, for making bentos, making food, I'm not sure the robotics technology is good enough to do everything. So I'd imagine at least one or two persons would be required.
Yeah, we made a video about the robot that makes ramen last year, right? And that was pretty impressive. It could cook the ramen, it could serve it up basically, and it could wash the dishes as well.
Yeah, it was soba, not ramen. But
But
technology itself is almost the same. And what they can do with that is, you know, almost the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's just noodle, a kind of
noodle. Yeah.
But, you know, that company was developing lots of different types of food robots, right?
Yeah.
I think they had a takoyaki machine as well, which machine is pretty cool. And I'm sure by now they've probably, you know, a year later, they've probably developed a lot more cool stuff, right? So, yeah, it's cool to see Lawson's and, you know, Family Mart making these kind of initiatives with their chain stores that are, you know, probably the most used shops in the country, right? But it'd be interesting to hear some of your guys' opinions. What do you think are some other initiatives maybe that these convenience could take to become more eco-friendly? So let us know over on the Facebook page, facebook.com/thisweekinjapan. So that wraps up all our news for this week. So let's move into the final segment of the show, Word of the Week. All right, so this is the part of the show where you were probably expecting to hear Yasu's voice introducing the section.
Yeah, this is new.
But for this week, what I tend to do is when I'm browsing on Twitter or the internet and I find these like funny Japanese words, all these wase-eiga words, I tend to like...
Sure you do.
I jot them down, right? And, you know, I'm 100% sure you've heard all these before, but...
Hope so.
I thought maybe... You know, maybe some of them are really obscure and you haven't heard them before. But some of them just kind of make me chuckle, or some of them just make me curious. So I thought I'd share them with you.
Sure.
And maybe you can enlighten me.
Let's try.
I can't remember the context for any of these. I just wrote them down. But the first one was donmai.
Donmai. Oh, donmai. Yeah. That's classic. You didn't know this one?
No. I mean, until recently.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think even my grandma would know this one.
Oh, it's really that old?
Donmai.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It means don't mind.
Don't mind. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, don't worry.
I
guess don't worry is the proper English expression.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know, for some reason, you know, since many, many years ago, Japanese people use the expression donmai.
So that was quite a tame one. That's obviously quite easy to understand, right? Don't my.
It's quite used quite lightly, you know, casually. So Yeah, whenever you make a small mistake in a daily life, yeah, your friend would say, don't mind.
Oh, that's a cool one. I mean, because, you know, it's always easier to use English-inspired Japanese words because I have a frame of reference, right? But yeah, don't worry about it. Don't mind. That's cool. All right. So the next one, I think it's probably like easy to understand once you know the breakdown. Mm. But when I first heard it in context, I just didn't understand that at all.
Okay.
It's barrier-free.
Oh, barrier-free. Yeah. It sounds totally fine to me. Barrier-free.
Can you explain?
So it's basically the concept of making all those real estate properties, mostly like stations or department stores, publicly accessible places, accessible to handicapped people or elderly people.
Yeah, yeah.
That need to use wheelchairs.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. So that's how I understood the word to mean.
Wait, how would you say that in English? I'm just too used to the word barrier-free.
Yeah, to be honest, I think we just say it's like accessible, you know, or it's like if you said like this building has ramps, then that means it's for, you know, it's more accessible.
Oh, okay.
Or it's like to be honest, or like I don't have anyone in my close circle who has like that kind of disability. Yeah, so I'm not exposed to that terminology that often, but I think you'd just say like somewhere is like accessible. It's an accessible building, or like if you wanted to ask like what's your accessibility like, you'd be like, oh yeah, we have elevators and ramps and, you know, handrails and stuff like that.
Right. Maybe there's no word equivalent that has the exact same meaning or nuance, but yeah, maybe being accessible, maybe the closest.
Yeah, and you know, once you hear that explanation, I'm sure if you're all are native English speakers, it makes a lot of sense because the barrier is the lack of a ramp, the lack of an elevator, right? So there is no barrier to like a metaphorical barrier to entering the building. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense, but I just thought the use of the word was kind of comical.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, I got my final one. This is I mean, for me, this was the most difficult one to understand because it doesn't sound like any English word. Okay. But I saw this on Twitter.
Yeah.
Resuba.
Huh?
Resuba.
Resuba?
Resuba.
Three katakana?
Yeah. It's actually, maybe if I say the longer version, this is the casual version. So, resubatoru is the full version.
Resubatoru. Yeah, I mean, like, my first take for resuba is response back. So, there are people replying to someone's tweet, but they are having an argument.
But basically, that's what I assumed it would
be. It's quite common in Japan, but I've never seen this word before.
That's what I wondered, because I saw this in a blog post, and it was like the top 10 internet slang words of 2021. And the person who wrote the blog post said that this word is very new and it's mostly used by young people.
I see. But the thing is that I could immediately tell that the word resu is the shortened form of response.
Interesting.
Or response in Japanese katakana. But the word resu in Japanese itself is quite old. I think it's been used since the beginning of internet, like in the 1990s.
And it's always meant response, resu.
Okay, so in the past, we used to have virtual bulletin boards,
Board
system, or abbreviated to BBS.
Oh, okay.
Like many years ago, right?
Sure.
So whenever someone replied to someone's comments, like we used to use the word resu to describe those replies.
I see, yeah.
Yeah, so resu ba, and ba was a tricky one. I thought, yeah, my first guess was baku. But when I think about it, resu itself is replying or responding back to someone. So that becomes a bit redundant. So yeah, resu batoru, then yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, it's just like it's taking your response to the next level, right? And it turns into like a battle, like an
basically
argument.
Having a series of responses in an angry, you know, emotional way, right?
sure, which happens like all the time on Twitter. I'm sure this has happened to you before, you know, when you just Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you just stumble across a resuba of two people you've never met before, but you just can't help but read. It's just fascinating.
Yeah.
And both people are like stupid and it's so funny. Like,
In many of those cases, the guy who originally posted the first comment, Like, he's not participating in the art.
Yeah, it's
right?
Like the original poster and then the two other people.
The other random, like, third persons.
Arguing about what he said,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, yes.
So it's almost like they're battling over his response, mm-hmm, you know? So it's mm-hmm. not like their response is not the battle, but they're uh-huh. battling over what his original response
yes,
meant.
Yes,
so there could be a couple of interpretations of it. but yeah, that's it. Those are my three Wase Ego words I learned recently.
I hope I passed.
yeah. I mean... Yeah, you pretty much got a perfect score as I expected you would.
But yeah, the last one was a bit tricky.
I had a feeling you would, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, mainly for me, I wanted to get some clarification because I was pretty sure I knew what they meant. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as a native Japanese, you might have some extra nuance that I wasn't picking up from, you know, my research.
Right, except that you didn't care about Baryafuri.
Yeah, sorry, guys. All right, well, that wraps it up for this week in Japan. So whichever platform you're listening to us on, make sure you're subscribed for a brand new episode every single week.
As I mentioned last week, I started a new company in Tokyo called Black Sheep Realty. And our main clients are foreigners living in Tokyo that are looking for new places to live. So if you're one of them, visit our website at blacksheeprealty.com.
Okay, guys, so stay healthy, stay safe. And if you don't mind, you can come join our barrier-free Facebook page over at facebook.com/thisweekinjapan and join a resuba in the comments below.
Absolutely.
And we'll be back next week for the very next episode of This Week in Japan.